Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
To quote a hero, when I was a youngster watching the boob tube, wee doggies. But this time it's not in a good sense because we're looking at significant cuts coming up next year on the Summer Flounder, a.k.a. Fluke. Stripers, boom. Scup, a.k.a. Porgies, boom. Seabass seems to be in the status quo. We'll get into that a little later in the program. Yeah, these things will be finalized or whatever. It's going to be the next month in January, and then everything will shake out in March when all the regulations are finally out. Man, it looks like they're just tightening the noose on a recreational saltwater angler. Hey, final day of six-day firearm week, deer week, although you can hunt with a bow. During that, I just don't get that. Can I hunt with a shotgun during archery season if I have an archery license? But that's Chris for if I get a independent blog on. We'll see what's going on with that. And final day of segment B of the black bear season. Bears, man, we saw some this past week in my travels. But we shall see. And just a reminder too, don't forget now it's the staggered stocking for the ringnecks and the bobwhites. Tuesday the 12th and next Saturday the 16th. These are our Fave 14. The numbers are the same for both days. In the central area, Collier's Mills 200, Howardville 50, Manahawkin 50, Medford 80, and Stafford Forge 160. Now, Fort Dix, special permit, is going to get 70 on the 12th and 60 on the 16th. In the southern region, Dix 130, Glassboro 100, Heiserville 50, Mad Horse 90, Millville. A lot of fields there, man. Heavy hunting pressure as well. 340, Nantunxet 110, Port Republic. I love the port. I love Port Republic, man. And Nantunxet, two of my faves. Tuckahoe 110 and Winslow 140. Now, those are the same numbers for both stocking weeks. And for the bobwhites, on the 12th, Greenwood and Peasley each get 260. On the 16th, the Saturday, they get 400 each. A striper bite is still going strong. Another big slug of fish moving in. Now the tail end of the run, the beginning and the end is here because a lot of smaller fish, hey, may be able to take one home to eat. And if you have your bonus tag, whoa, you might be able to take two home to eat. Still some 40-plus inch fish around, but those numbers are on the wane. And just a reminder, too, again, you have to, if you want that antlered buck permit, you have until December 13th at 11:59 to do it. And freshwater bite is on those stock trap, man, that they put in. Oh, I'm going to read that again. And for the Thanksgiving week, the winter stocking, man, they are biting their heads off. The tog are chewing big time. All the white leggers. White leggers seem to be the ticket for the bigger tog, at least. Anyway, coming up in our next segment, we're speaking about birds, the stocking birds. What about the ducks, man, ducks and geese? Coastal zone waterfowl season is open, but the weather has not been conducive. Joining us in our next segment, the cool Gary Bell, president of New Jersey Waterfowlers, talks about some, you know, early season coastal zone waterfowl tactics, if you want to call them that, with the birds, the weather. Everything is predicated on the weather, but there are still birds out there to get. So grab that cup, grab that Rebel. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Back this was the day after Thanksgiving. The coastal zone, second portion of the coastal zone waterfowl season open, a.k.a. duck season, canada geese, brant, whatever. There's some varied limits in there. But I'll tell you, we had a few cold days, what, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday night, so going to be in the 50s this week. A lot of big rain coming, I guess, tomorrow into Monday. Who knows what? But it's been, past few years especially, the coastal zone, it's only open, the first portion is only a couple of days. You want the later portion along the tidal marshes of New Jersey, all the way up there from Monmouth on down to the Cape and around. But the past couple of years have been weird. I mean, warm day. The one time Lovey Deemer and I were out, what was it, 50 degrees, 55 degrees? The ducks were hanging out, wearing sunglasses, drinking pina coladas. Honest to God, it was crazy. Let's get a track, though, on especially hunting the puddlers, the dabbler ducks, mallards, black ducks, the mallard, black duck, hybrid, you know, whatever, on the coastal marshes during the beginning of the second portion because it is not really conducive right now. You can get the birds, especially the divers. Hopefully they're going to be coming down later on. We get some more sustained cold. But right now you do have opportunities. Join us on the line. First time on Rack and Fin Radio going in our 21st year in January. is longtime president, 20 years, Gary Bell, New Jersey Waterfowlers. Gary, when I put a call into you, it was getting kind of desperate, man. I want some ducks, but where the hell are they?
Tom, they're pretty much all up north. The puddlers are starting to come down a little bit. I was out yesterday, and they were just finally had that nice little northwest wind blowing. They started working their way down. Really, for puddlers, what we really need is a good 3 days of northwest wind blowing 20, 25 day and night. Mm-hmm. And that will be pushing some of these birds down. So they are trickling down. You know, I call it the early birds. They come down through. The younger birds come down earlier. And but pretty much we need that. We need that colder weather. On the coast, really hurts when we have a lot of rain.
Yeah.
And birds stay inland, and they sit in all these retention ponds and all these back swamps. Once it gets cold, it pushes those birds out on the coast. You know, so pretty much that's what the guys that strictly hunt the coast, that's what they wait for. So the longer the season, the better. You know,
exactly right.
Luckily, the state has it. You know, we open up just for like 3 days in the beginning because it's a split. So that makes everybody pretty happy. We're able to get a couple of brant. If the brant is open, you got to be careful in the brant season. It's crazy what the yep. brant are like. You know, it's right now there's more brant now than we ever seen. We're only allowed one. I don't know the reason. What the feds think, I have no idea. Other than that, that's pretty much, you know, you wait for that cold weather to come down, and we're starting to get it now. But like mm-hmm. he says, it's going to warm up again, you know. So yep. what it does, it just puts the brakes on the birds. They just hold, you know.
Gary, what primarily are we looking at now? We have mallards, black ducks. Now, the blue-winged teal are probably gone. But now you mentioned that you heard from one of your sources that green wings are still up, way up in New York State.
Right. I talked to a guy that's up in New York. In St. Lawrence River, the green-winged teal are still stacked on the river. You know, so, and this is what's been going on for the last couple of years. It's just been a lot warmer. There's mm-hmm. no reason for a bird to fly down when it doesn't have to, you know, so we rely on Lake Champlain, Lake George. We need some of those big lakes to freeze up. And if we don't get that, we don't usually get a lot of good birds, you know, so, you know, I've been shooting a couple of black ducks, you know, on the meadow, and mm-hmm. they're just that dark. They're that dirty orange foot. I'm not seeing those big, nice, big bulls, you know, orange feet yet.
Yeah, all right, the orange legs. Yeah. So, guy, we're looking at black ducks, mallards. Guy, what about, again, they classify them as a mallard, I guess. I'm seeing more and more of them over the years. Again, because we like to drive through Forsyth, and we like to, especially in the late winter, early spring, seeing a lot of the mallard black duck hybrids. Have you noticed that? I've just seemed to be in increasing numbers.
Yeah, a little bit, not much. I don't think they're really too concerned about that.
Yeah,
I had an issue with one of the wardens that, you know, it was all black. It was the black duck was completely black, but the wings were mallards. And you know, he kind of accused me of shooting two black ducks when it was very well. It was like if you strip it all down, you look at the wings, and they were all 100% mm-hmm. mallards. You know, but there are some guys are getting with the, you know, the back tail, you know, the curl tail on the mallards,
right.
on the black duck and
Drake's
so
tails.
I've
yeah.
had, you know, yeah, I've had a couple of black ducks that had a little greenish in the heads, which sometimes the older birds, you do get that color. So, but I haven't heard many people, you know, getting that, you know, that mixed breed in there.
Mm-hmm. But, Gary, go ahead. Until we get this, it's inevitable. Now, how long will it last? Who knows? A cold snap, 2 days, 3 days, as Gary said. Gary Bell, president of New Jersey Waterfowlers. Topic is this a second portion beginning of the coastal duck season. Waterfowl, also Canada Goose, Brant, whatever. But it's not. Okay, I remember sometimes we were ice fishing in mid-December, and the gunning here was, as we'll call it, gunning down. Shout out to the late, great George Loader. George is up there listening, saying, now you're going to mess this one up. We're hunting down there behind Marmore, you know, Beasley's Point back in there in the Meadows. And, Gary, it was balls to the wall, man. Ducks were flying in everywhere. Winds blowing, we're half frozen. A week later, we're sitting out there with 60 degrees. See, you just don't know, but it's early. It's late. Right now, Gary, what are we looking at? You have 1 day to hunt. You're out there on the meadows. Black ducks primarily, mallards. Do you have anything else around?
Pretty much on the salt marsh. On the marsh, you got your black ducks. That's your 90% birds.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, you do get some gadwalls coming through. You know, again, once that cold weather starts, you'll start seeing a little bit more variety. You know, your shovelers will start showing up. Your pintails, some of the pintails are down here. Some guys are getting them. You know, not crazy, but the marshes are changing, and
right.
I think that it's not for the good. I noticed the tides are running a lot higher than they always did. You know, some of the ramps always would, you know, only flood out on a flooded tide or moon tide, but it seems like they're just about ready to go over the banks on an everyday occurrence now. So I'm not really sure, but that's what it looks like. It is rising. The bay is rising, and that's affecting the food source that's in the area. You know, and if there's no food, there's no ducks.
As simple as that.
Food, yeah. You're going to find ducks. That's all there is to it.
The primary forage for the puddlers. What is it? I mean, I know the rail birds, for example, like the wild rice, the soars up in the Mullica and areas like that, in the Dividing Creek. What's primary down here now? What are they gorging on now?
That's a good question. Is, you know, I've gotten them with the they're filled with that Spartina seed,
yep.
You know, which is not a really good food base, you know, and I just have a feeling they're going into the backwoods more. I did shoot some mallards that were on, you know, that I've gotten on the bay, and they were full of acorns. So
get out. Wow.
Yeah. Yep. So
now, Gary, I've seen that up in the north zone early season with the woodies and the mallards, because we like, you know, back right. to hunt down as the season progresses, coming down. But wow, right. I never saw that down here. And Gary, mention the pintails. Again, the limit's only one. It used to be
one.
Populations, reproduction, overwintering. Something's happening here.
Yeah, with that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. They did studies years ago, and I don't think anybody knows, to tell you the truth. You know, I certainly don't know, you know, so I used to see them a lot, and now you don't.
Yeah.
I do mention up there the sawmill, the Meadowlands up in that area, the North Zone.
Yeah.
There's quite a few pintails up there, you know. And then they move down, but when they come down, I have no idea where they go.
It's like the weak fish. When they come down the coast, they hit them. Where the hell happens to them? What happens to them?
That's it. Right, where they go. Right.
That's
right.
Wild hunting up Sawmill Creek. You have the turnpike behind you. You have Manhattan ahead of you. And there's ducks beyond all get out.
That's crazy up there. That area can be a lot of birds in that area. At times.
It's not right.
Trying to go up. Yeah, it's hit or miss. Anymore, it's hit or miss, you know. Look, I'm going to be out tomorrow. It's Friday, you know. What am I going to expect to go find, you know, tomorrow, you know, so.
Yeah, listen.
These are buffies or what?
Yeah, again, buffleheads, I've seen some of them. What now? You're talking big spreads, a half a dozen decoys, a dozen? You're mixing them up. What's the dealio? Go.
For the divers, a lot of guys, I think, are making a lot of mistakes. I mean, anymore, they finally, some of the greenhead gear and some of the tangle-free, they finally got smart. And they're starting to make some hens. But years ago, when you bought a dozen buffies in a box, they were all drakes. There was no hens. And I never could understand it. I use all hens. My diver rig or my puddler rig is 90% hens, you know. So, and I always, you know, it's like when you go to a bar. And you're a young guy. You go to a bar and you see a bunch of guys in there with one or two women. What's your chance?
Get
you
know? The hell out. Let's find someplace.
That's vintage Gary Bell.
Go, man.
But that's how it is. You know, like right now is like, you know, for mallards, you know, this is like their time they start mating. So you get a couple, you know, a single drake, and he sees a whole bunch of drakes in your rig. I ain't got a chance. You know, I'm right. going to get chased away. It's just human nature, you know, so.
One of my favorites, though, I would love to get one mounted because I've shot at them over the years. I think I nailed one. It was a hen. The widgeon, the bald pates, they are absolutely gorgeous.
Nice.
That's a little later on, correct?
They should just start coming down now. They're really stacked up in the Manasquan and the Shark River. If you really just want to take pictures, they're really loading up on the shoreline right now. We're in like a sandy, you know, sandy gravel bottom, you know. So
I had a call from a tackle shop up on the Sports River. The exact same thing. There's ducks up the wazoo up here, and that's what they are probably.
Yep. Yeah. Just give them time. They'll start working away. You know, we get some great, you know, the right tides and all that. You know, like this says, puddlers, you want to shoot on a low tide. And guys do, you know, I did notice, Tom, guys don't want to sit any longer than 9, 10 o'clock. They're gone. The ramps are completely empty at 10 o'clock. And I do believe for the puddlers, They changed their puddlers' habits.
They're getting
harassed early in the morning. They leave. The guys leave. By 10 o'clock, the birds start trickling back in. And most of my puddler shooting anymore is from 9 to 2.
Really?
I very seldom get birds in the morning. I get an occasional black duck or two early in the morning on the meadow, you know?
Yeah.
Then after that, it goes dead for a while, and then it picks back up, you know?
Yeah, it's fine. I noticed that as well down the, what's that, the Parkertown Beach, the ramp down there.
Okay, right.
Seen
right.
that. Yeah, exactly what you said. No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, it's just, they want to just, I don't know if they just want to shoot, they just want to pull the trigger or what, you know, and then mm-hmm. they got to go home. I don't know. You know, I just, and the way things are going now, you know, with things so slow, you know, the birds are not too slow. It's just, I tell people, just go out and look at the scenery, you know, go to a place where you like to watch, you know, the scenery, and just be patient. Be patient. You will get birds.
They will show up. The P in my last name actually does not stand for patience. Because, Gary, ask my lovely Dee Marie, in a deer blind or duck blind, either sit still, please, or shut up.
Yeah.
Well, Gary, listen, we only have a couple of minutes left in this segment. Thanks for your input on this. But what about the New Jersey Waterfowlers? Tell us about the organization. I understand it's been around since, what, 70 or 71, 69, somewhere?
The guy started in 70, and it's been, you know, it's been really strong, you know, through the years. You know, membership had dropped. We don't know what the membership, you know, why it dropped. It was very strong when we had when we tried to fight, you know, it went over from lead to steel. Guys were very involved with that, and a lot of guys quit on that.
Yeah, but, I remember. Oh, well, yeah. I was a kid. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, the membership is still going. What happened is we're starting to get some of the groups down in South Jersey, some of the guys like Jamie Lloyd down in that area. And there's more involvement. The duck hunters are going to be down South Jersey. That's kind of what it looks like it's coming to.
Hey, you know, speaking of which, at your banquet last year, who was sitting two tables from me? But the lovely Luann and Nick Germanio from Belle Plaine Supply. All the way down there in Lower Township in the Cape, man. That was pretty cool. I hadn't seen Nicky in years, man.
No. Our dinners are going real well. You know, good fundraiser. And that's able to support, you know, a lot of the stuff that we're doing. You know, educational programs we do. You know, I think the state's happy with our educational programs. You know, the do's and don'ts on waterfowl. And then we're really doing real good South Jersey. And starting up North Jersey is the Wood Duck Box program. That's running real good. We got roughly about 100 boxes out now, and we're going to look to put out another 100 in the next couple of years. We can be, you know, going strong on that. So,
well, Gary, how do people find out more about the New Jersey Waterfowlers? You have a Facebook website page. What do you got?
We do have a website. It's up. We just got it. So give us a little bit more time. By the end of the year, it should be up and running. You know, it'll be, you know, just, you know, you'll see it. New Jersey, you know, it's the Facebook.
Okay, Gary.
I'm not a computer guy, but these guys will find it. They find everything else.
Hey, Bell, I still use dial-up. And I still have a rotary phone.
There you go. Now you're talking.
People, it works. They work. Go with it. Well, Gary, have a great remainder of the season. Best of all. We'll see you at the dinner. Hopefully we'll see you at the Atlantic County Game Preserve. Listeners, this man does not miss. Trust me. He does not miss those birds. Okay, Gary, you take care, man.
All right, Tom. Thanks a lot. Have a good week.
See you later, bro. Gary Bell, cool guy. Way long in that segment. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station. Fox on Tech.
How secure are your private messages on Meta's platforms? The company's messaging app called WhatsApp has long insisted their text messaging features end-to-end encryption, but that claim has been called into question over the presence of Meta's monitoring staff being able to view messages sent through the service. Now Meta says end-to-end encryption is being rolled out on Facebook and Messenger. This will include things like editing already sent messages and having both messages and media disappear after 24 hours. It should work on both mobile apps and desktop browsers, and clearing cookies will clear records of the chats. Not every product will feature this encryption, however. Community chats in Facebook groups, for instance, won't. Neither will chats with business or professional accounts. And the company says if one party in the chat shares the chat with a third party, that new party sees everything. with Fox on Tech. I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Here we go. Look out below. You're back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. We have December 9th and 10th. Again, that was Gary Bell, New Jersey Waterfowlers, man. Quackers, get the quackers. I mean, this old Red Skelton skit. Yeah, people remember that Red Skelton? Yeah, right. And I didn't realize how tall that guy was. He's about 6'2", 6'2". He's a big guy. He had the Gertrude and Heathcliff thing or something. No, what was the joke? What do ducks do when they fly upside down? They quack up. As a kid, I thought that was hilarious. But back to the coastal zone season. It's going to be touchy here for a while until we get, as Gary said, that sustained cold snap, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. Get the freeze going on. One, I want the ducks to come down. I'm going to love that. Two, I want to get some ice fishing in. It's going to have, unfortunately, going to have to be up in North Jersey again, but that's the way the situation is. Speaking of fishing and what is happening on the front, last week we had on Tom Foti talking about the striper situation. Now, they had the meeting this past Tuesday at the Stafford Forge Municipal Building there in Manahawkin, and basically this is what came up. Tommy had mentioned that there was going to be, talking about the flounder, the sea bass, and the porgies, a.k.a. scup, shook out like this. Looks, and again, this has to be voted on, and the whole business process is ongoing, but this is the skinny. A 14.5% cut in striped bass, and I don't understand this. Another cut in porgies, 10%, and the scup. Why? You just had them a 30, it's a big cut in that. And then here's the death knell. This is going to really impact the shore tackle shops and ancillary businesses. A 28% cut in fluke, a.k.a. summer flounder. And I talked to Ty. I said, what is going on? Is there a movement to basically wipe out inshore recreational fishing as we know it? Foti, glad to have you back on. Listen, it's extremely rare to have guests back-to-back in a week, but this is a vital situation here. Tom, what was your take? You were at the meeting. Listeners, full disclosure, I was, and I was hoping to get something out of the woods way late, way dark. And I said, I don't think I'm going to make it, even if I drive like I'm on the Concorde. That used to be a supersonic jet. So, Tay, what was your take? You were there, packed house, I understand. What happened?
Well, everybody got upset. Everybody's telling, what are you doing? Why are you making us kill more fish than we need to kill to get one to take home to eat? Mm-hmm. Why are we basically putting in rules and regulations that makes no biological sense, since the spawning stock biomass is bigger to produce a high young of the year? It's not protecting the females. The females, there's enough females that do the highest young of the year if the recruitment is right. But it's environmental conditions, which the fishermen have no control over. I mean, they're the regulators. They should be working with their states to stop global warming and basically clean up the Chesapeake Bay. But they just, you know, their directors and their personnel at those states have not done that. They've tried. But then they introduced blue catfish into the Chesapeake Bay that gobbles everything down and must eat a lot of striped bass fries. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're getting low numbers. I mean, if I was Jewish, you and I would start sitting shiver for the recreational fishing industry on the East Coast next week to celebrate its death.
Tom, Foti's not being melodramatic. He's been doing this. He's a legislative chairman of Jersey State Federation of Sportsmen's Clubs and the Jersey Coast Anglers Association, and a former longtime, something like 24 years, longtime governor's appointee to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, and served as the governor's proxy for 6 years. That's 30-something years in this game, Tom. So you've seen it all. You've seen the highs, not so highs, the lows, the lower than lows. I think right now, Tom, we're probably at the nadir if this stuff goes through. What do you think?
I think that we basically are restricting the fisheries on both the commercial and the recreational side with data that is bad, as usual.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Garbage in, garbage out. And also, that is bigger than what you need to be to produce the highest youngs of the year, and you're just not doing it because of environmental conditions, global warming, and other factors. We have nothing to do with that. We can't control global warming. You and I personally can't do nothing. We do our best. You know, I put solar panels in, I drive a Prius and things like that. But it's up to the government to do that, and the government's failed. The same way they failed us about, you know, years ago, we've talked about this before, they were supposed to put, Dr. John Borman went before the Congressional committee when they first put changing the MREPs in 2008 and said, I need $50 million to run this program. And the question I asked the other night, I says, in 1981, we were spending $18 million on recreational statistics, the government. What are they spending now? I said, that's a rhetorical question. They're still spending the same $18 million. And you could buy a hell of a lot more time and energy in 2007, and yet we're spending the same pittance to try to basically get the figures on about 11, 12 million saltwater anglers. It's ridiculous.
And Tom, I mean, it's the march, you know, and I get this thing, well, you know, and like you said, for these people aren't on the boats. It's all computer modeling and things like that. And I spoke to one guy. He says, well, you know, I said, what about this and this? And they said, oh, yeah, we meant well. I said, with all due respect, you ever hear the term? It's a cliche because it's true. The path to hell is paved with good intentions.
That's right.
Like you said, it's a mishmash of conflicting information, stocks, biomass, what have you. And it's I'm just seeing more and more, like, and I told you this last week, more and more guys, increasing numbers that we, no, nah, I'm not going to fish this year. I'm going to do something else, pickleball or something. So the angler numbers are dropping as well. People are just getting fed up.
It's hurting the party boat industry. It's hurting the charter boat industry. It's hurting the tackle stores. It's hurting the marinas. And it's hurting the quality of life in New Jersey. You know, part of the quality, one of the reasons I moved to New Jersey was the fish. I was at the Fish Island Beach State Park. I could have picked a bunch of states because I was basically just graduating from college after the service. And I said, I want to go to be as close to Island Beach State Park as possible. So that's where I came. I moved to New Jersey to fish. And to take fish home to eat, not just to fish and catch and release fish, but to be able to harvest fish to feed myself, feed my wife, and give it to my neighbors sometimes. I mean, and that's been taken away from us. And we barely can take enough fish to basically have a meal out of nowadays. You know, it used to be I could supply my neighbors with bluefish and things like that, or it's when you had a big catch of fluke or things like that, you spread it out. Nowadays, you don't have enough to feed yourself.
And Tom, just as an aside, I took the captain's word to heart because I've known him for many, many years, decades, party boat up in the Shark River area. He said, Tommy P., it was great, the striper bite's great, but people are getting tired of, after a while it wears, you know, you're paying the fee to get on, the gas to get there, the lunch and all, but that the fish of a lifetime catching, I agree, they were getting, Tom, 40 to 50, sometimes they had a couple of fish over 60 inches, great photo, back in, immediately released, what have you. But that catch of a lifetime, the big fish thing gets tired when you're spending that kind of money and you want to take a fish home to eat.
Yeah, I mean,
and you can't.
You can't. I mean, one of the guys the other night basically asked the question, you mean if I caught an 84-pound striped bass and have the world record, I can't weigh it in? And, yeah, they've lost that opportunity now. We've put them out of being able to do something like that. So all those tackle records we have on striped bass are gone. And, you know, it's going to be happening with other species. I mean, we make decisions on what we basically do to manage fisheries, and it should be in the best interest of the public. It's supposed to take
the
economic
stakeholders.
Right. And supposed to take the economic impact on the stakeholders. Well, you know, the same thing is, this is not going to necessarily have impact, but we don't have the data to prove it. I mean, and this is what the same answer I've been getting for 35 years. And Tom, I go back longer than that. I remember Bob Pond coming to Berkeley Striper Club in the 70s and talking about the fact that environmental conditions were causing the problems with the striped bass in the Chesapeake Bay, besides us harvesting too many fish. But you remember, back then, we were harvesting in New Jersey. We had the only regulations, and we 18 inches and 10 fish. I mean, other states had 14 inches and unlimited. You could take whatever you want home. So we've cut back our harvest. We've cut back it on summer flounder. I mean, summer flounder in New Jersey was 14 inches. And down south, it was 13 inches. We're now up at 17, 18, 19 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And we're protecting fish that start spawning at 13 inches. It's not where they spawn at 20 inches or something. They're spawning at 13 inches. As a matter of fact, when we rebuilt the stocks on summer flounder, we only had one, we call ones, twos, and threes. That's how old the fish were. So they were 13, 16, maybe 17 inches. That was it, the biggest fish. And we brought the spawning stock biomass all the way up. You know, they refuse to look at, they don't want to look at alternatives because they're so set in their way. I mean, as you know, I sit on MAFAC, Marine Fishery Advisory Council Committee, excuse me, to the Secretary of Commerce. And we're talking about climate resiliency. And what do we do because of climate change, because it's affecting all the fisheries? And he says, we need to be thinking, and we need to have common sense management. Not telling me you can't do this because it's not in the regulations or the laws at this time. Then we need to change the law, but it takes so long, and nobody wants to do that because they're afraid of lawsuits by the environmental groups. I mean, they started the train when the environmental groups started suing National Marine Fisheries Service in the 90s. They started saying we got to avoid lawsuits because they were losing money because they were never fighting them on appeal. And what happened was they basically put in regulations that are very, very conservative. They're always on the ultra-conservative part. Well, that was fine when you were doing decent bag limits. But now you got us down where you're killing the industry and you're just killing the fisheries. I mean, and they don't realize this. A lot of the people that run the fisheries no more are not the biologists that used to go out in the field and work on party boats or go out and go with the commercial fishermen or basically do sampling. They're models. They're sitting behind a computer basically figuring out this should do this, this should do this. And we're in a real world. We're not in a computer world. And things in the real world don't work like the computer models they have.
Tom, we've been fishing it, and my lovely Dee Marie says, does this look like a species that's in trouble? I mean, how many can you catch? And it's not just this one area, Tom. I get reports from all over the place. And, listen, the one little ray of light here, from what I understand, the sea bass, Tom, stayed status quo.
Yeah, and we're two times above the quota.
Yeah,
the target.
Right.
I mean, we can't win. I actually got up the other night and apologized. I said, I'm sorry for lying to you for all these years. Because I basically said years ago, if we suffer the pain, we'll reap the benefit.
Fody, I remember that and said, I remember yelling at you. I remember that. Yeah. This is how things turn around, huh?
Yeah, and now I'm saying, we suffered the pain, and we're still suffering the pain, even though we rebuilt the stocks. That's not what should be happening. Of course, they're regulating as what was going on in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, but not what went on in the 80s, 90s, and beyond. I mean, think about this. 1986, today, December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day. Always remember that day. I'm fishing Lavalette. I'm fishing bluefish. The water is so cold that I'm catching 15-pound bluefish and dragging them out in 3 minutes because they're still stunned from the coldness. And that's when I caught the largest striped bass that I ever caught, an 8-pound test from the surf, a 46-pounder. But it's Pearl Harbor Day. Now we can go out, the water temperature is 50 degrees. Or higher. Well, it's not cold anymore. Yeah, we're having some cold temperatures here, but this is not what it's cold. I would have ice on my lagoon nowadays by this point. Get my boat out. I haven't had ice on my lagoon that I had to worry about since 1988. And when I first moved to my house, there used to be 9 inches of ice on my lagoon.
Ew.
You could walk. People would remember driving cars over Barnegat Bay?
Yeah, I remember
that.
Hasn't happened.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Tom, we got to hang on. This is up against a hard break. We have Tom Fody on the line. We're going to be talking again, get more into the striper stuff in the next segment. Grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
The WPG Talk Radio app is everything South Jersey. Local news and information updated around the clock from New Jersey's largest radio news team. Download the WPG Talk Radio app for your phone, tablet, Apple CarPlay, and Android Auto today at WPGTalkRadio.com.
Powered by Smokers Haven. Smokers Haven has the finest selection of cigars. Stop in at one of their 5 locations and let them help you find the perfect cigar to pair with your life. SmokersHavenNJ.com.
Fox News, I'm Carmen Roberts. Israeli warplanes continue striking parts of Gaza, including some southern areas designated for evacuees.
Israeli forces push deeper into Gaza while Hamas launches more rockets into Israel. As the Israel-Hamas war enters its third month, the United States vetoed a UN resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire while urging Israel to protect Gazan civilians.
Fox's Nate Foy in Israel. A Michigan judge sentences school shooter Ethan Crumbly to life in prison without parole.
For the 17-year-old that victims' families called a monster for the mass shooting at Oxford High School 2 years ago, the killing of 4 classmates and injury of 7 others.
Fox's Jeff Manasso. And demonstrations today at the UN climate conference in Dubai may be the most intense yet in a push for nations to take decisive action. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Atlantic City Electric AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. Some patchy fog to start today, otherwise it's partly sunny and mild with a high 59. Cloudy tonight, the low 45, and then temperatures rising into the upper 50s. Tomorrow, rain and a thunderstorm mainly late in the day, otherwise cloudy and windy with a high 66. A shower to start Monday morning, otherwise a mix of clouds and sun, windy and colder, Monday's high 48. I'm AccuWeather forecaster Rose Tamburino on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
You're back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Week of December 9th and 10th. What kind of poison do I want? Tom Foti just said off the air when discussing the options for the striped bass regulations for the 14.5% wherever it's going to go. We're going to get into that in another segment somewhere whenever this stuff shakes out, and we'll see what it is. Tom, what just a sense of exasperation it doesn't seem to be happening. What do the recreational anglers do? What recourse do we have? How does this stuff get? MRIPS was supposed to be a big improvement to whatever's happening. Obviously, it's not from my corner anyway. What's going on? What do we do?
We need to stop fighting as a community. You know, they're trying to get the party boats and charter boats against the private boats. We can't allow that. We also have a bunch of people saying we're not restricted enough in the recreational community. They're getting money from environmental groups and other groups. I mean, we have these people that, on the last hearing, not the one we had yesterday in person, because they didn't show up. But at the hearing before, they always say, no, the guys fishing on party boats and taking everything, they're doing this, they're doing that. When they had to say that, speaking to these people face-to-face, you notice they didn't show up to the meeting. And they didn't say a word about it. There was none of that garbage that went on in the first virtual hearing. I mean, we have divided the community, and the community has divided itself. And used to be, we all worked together. When we were working for striped bass, game fish, I had the catch and release guys, I had the assistant fishermen, I had everybody working, because what we were looking for is a better recreational experience and also to protect game fish so we at least would have fish to take home to eat. We've gotten away from that. And the organizations that fought for it, Stripers Forever and things like that, whenever you heard the last time they talked about making it game fish, whenever the Guides Association or any of those associations,
that Guides Association, is that the organization or group that you don't have to be a guide to belong to, just send the money?
Yeah. When the CCA of Maryland was formed, I was invited down by, I think you know these people, Chris Wells, who wrote the book, yeah. Stripers, Clay Gooch, who got involved in Maryland sport fishing, and Al Goetz, who was on the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries and the Mid-Atlantic Council. And they came down and said, we're starting the CCA because we don't think the Maryland Sport Fishing Association is working hard enough on making striped bass and no-sail fish in Maryland. So we're going to do it. I said, I'll give you all the help I get. They said, why don't you come down and be the executive director? I said, no, I'm not looking for a paid job, but we'll help you. It's now almost 40 years later, 30 years later, because that was the early 90s, and they're not talking about it no more. None of the groups are talking about it. I was running up and down the coast in the late 90s and early 90s, basically talking about how we should make some striped bass no-sail. We had all the groups up and down the coast doing the same thing. What happens when they didn't win it? You know, unlike New Jersey that started in 1939 and took us to 1991 to do it and kept plugging at it, we never gave up. There was all these guys like Bill Feinberg at the Asbury Park Fishing Club that had worked in 1952 and was still working in his 80s and just passed away a couple of years ago in his 90s, but always working for Game Fish.
Mm-hmm.
Those people have not done that. There's not, the Guides Association doesn't even talk about it. Matter of fact, they support the commercial fishermen. They never attack the commercial fishermen. If you listen to any of their stuff, and any of this stuff, Stripers Forever, they never talk about the commercial fishermen anymore. They talk about restricting the recreational catch. And so they pit each other against the other, so we're not working as a cohesive.
Tom, this wedge being driven by the catch and release, and I'm taking a shot here because I like to use the fly rod on occasion.
Yeah.
Primarily the saltwater fly guys, and the guys, the wedge being driven, and as Hutch wrote in an excellent editorial a couple months ago, with this reduction from 28 to less than 38 to 28 to 31, we've won the battle but not the war.
No.
So they are, and Tom, as you wrote in that paper, which is, if you can tell the people how to get it, this is, Foti was dead on here. where you said these guys that for catch and release, well, they're out there targeting striper. Oh, no, we're not. We're fishing for bluefish. Remember you wrote that photo? You remember that? And I said, how many times have I seen it? Oh, we're weak fishing. Dude, the fluke fishing doesn't season, doesn't open for another week. And you know what they're targeting, but catch it. No, we're targeting something else. So that wedges, the wedges, and it's in there, Tom. It's been driven through. And again, it's a divide and conquer mentality.
Yeah, and look at it. It's 51% of the mortality on striped bass for the last couple of years now. It might be different last year because all the big catches in New Jersey, which are being put in question around because the nerfs is bad. And now they're saying, well, we were off by 30%, but they says it'll take us to 2026 to get it straightened out. And so we're going to suffer the consequences for the next 4 years. But if you look at it, those old statistics, 51% in 2020, 2021 was coming from hook and release mortality. When these people went before, you know, the commission and to basically talk about a striped bass, they didn't work. You need to have seasons where you're not supposed to stripe fish for striped bass at all if you want to reduce the hook and release mortality. And they were dead set against it because, oh, that'll affect my customers. I won't have my charters.
There you go.
Because they only do catch and release, so it makes no difference. When Stripers Forever put in their last press release about maybe we need a moratorium, yeah, because it doesn't affect them. They don't care about taking a fish. They're not subsistence fishing. And it's so much against environmental justice, which is supposed to be one of the big things that this governor is basically doing about talking about, you know, righting all the wrongs that we've done for the last 100 years about the poor. You know, putting all the power plants in Newark and basically put them all the pollution where they stuff for asthma. But they also did it with fish. And they did it to Native Americans. They stole their fish. So for the benefit of others, and now they're basically killing everybody. Now because of diversion of water, I mean we got a mess. I hate to say this. I'm 76 years old, but I'm not seeing the light anymore unless we really get behind working together to clean up the mess we've created, and the mess the regulators have created. And we need to start going to our congressmen again. You know, Congressman Pallone, Congressman along the coast. Mm-hmm. Jeff Andrew, Congressman Smith, and saying, we can't live with this. We need you to do something about what's happened to the recreational fishing community.
Right, but, Tom, one thing, let me just say, we have to qualify, T, on the environmental groups. There's radical environmental groups, and you know, and some of that want fishing and hunting stopped. Like, no, yeah. No. And then you have other environmental groups. I'll throw one out there, Clean Ocean Action or something, like whatever. That they're actually working, trying to do some good. You have to differentiate because there are the radical environmental groups. And Tom, what gets my ass in the air when you read who are these quote unquote journalists that conservation organizations, and they're putting them under that umbrella when they're radical enviros that want to stop everything.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I mean, I sit on the board of Clean Water Action,
right.
Not Clean Ocean, Clean Water Action, and they're trying to do the right thing. They're trying to get clean water. We've been trying to get the pollution out of the water. I mean, why should every river, every lake, every stream, mm-hmm. every body of water in New Jersey have a fish advisory because of the mercury contamination we get from Pennsylvania and Ohio with their power plants burning coal and comes over out in the form of NOx? We don't do what we need to do to basically protect the people. And that's one of the things Jersey Coast has been doing, other organizations have been doing for many years. And the problem is we don't get any support anymore. I mean, as we've talked about, I mean, Jersey Coast, I'm the fifth youngest board member at 76. I have four guys in their 80s and two older than me in the late 70s. We don't have a younger generation getting involved. They sit behind their computers. They don't, but when we had the computer one, they had 100 people. We had a good crowd on the other day, on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But we had 50 people. Do you remember when we were at Ocean County College when we were doing Amendment 5?
There in Tom's River. Mary, Mother of God, man. Beyond standing room only, Fody.
550 people.
People in the hallways.
Yeah, I mean, when we did the one in Ocean Spa, Long Branch, for keeping the EZ closed, 900 people. When I used to do three hearings, because I was always at every hearing, you know, I can count on one hand about all the hearings I missed because of health or being away on striped bass over the last 35 years. I mean, as I said, I go back a long time. I mean, I was a member of Save Our Stripers, which was in New York, back mm-hmm. in the early 70s, as the work of a striped bass game fish, because I was going to Hofstra out there, and that's where I basically belonged. If you want to find out what options you support and want to write a letter, Jersey Coast has their position on our webpage. Go to our webpage. Plus, you'll see my article just knocking summer flounder, talking about it in really depth, and we can't cover all the facts here. But go to www.jcaa.org and read my article and Paul Hartel's article and what Stripe is, what you should comment on. And I said, I didn't want to comment on anything. I didn't comment on anything. And I said, this is just poison, and we've got to pick our poison. And it doesn't make any sense. So I'm not falling into this trap. I mean, the other groups have to make a choice because they got to do things like you don't want to put in further behind the community. So we really need to do that. But, I mean, if you want with Jersey Coast, and Jersey Coast position is almost all the position, the same thing of ASA and other groups. We're all basically on the same page. But it's disheartening. I mean, Peter, a long time ago, tried to shut us down. And they were showing up. They've been quiet for the last couple of years. But remember when they used to show up and boycott the Dick Weber tournament down in
Cape May? I remember the Bassmaster Classic in Pittsburgh. Idiots were out there holding up signs. Whatever. They had a billboard, a dog with a hook in its lip. Right. I went up today, and my boss, the great Dick, would say, leave him alone. I said, Dick, I can't leave this alone or you're fired. Okay. So I left it alone.
Yeah. We're down at the mall. This is many years ago when ASA was running the National Fishing Day. And we used to bring 550 inner-city kids to fish on one of the ponds in the mall. And we stock it with fish, and the kids were there. Peter shows up, and they push a young lady in a mermaid suit.
In a mermaid suit.
onto the thing. And they have a guy walking around with dressed as a dolphin, holding signs, fish hooks hurt. And we're sitting there looking at it, and the park police come over. So we pull her out of the lake, and I says, nah, leave it there. The kids will use them as target practice. They're the inner city kids.
There you go.
I mean.
Yeah, Tom, I remember those days. In fact, I remember that mermaid. She was a looker, man. Yes, me. But that's some of my younger, crazier days. Well, Tom, thanks for joining us on Rock Minute. So, tell you, this is all going to shake out when meetings, what, next month, March? When are the New Jersey Fishing Game? Whatever's going to be decided between the 28% reduction in fluke, the cut in porgies, the stripers. When's this going to be? March?
No, the fluke will be decided next week. I'll be at the meeting. I'm going to go to Philadelphia on my own dime and just to see what the hell's going on. So I'll be at Philadelphia next Tuesday and Wednesday. Some of striped bass will be decided in January at the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. I'll leave you with this parting quote. Get involved. You need, and not just behind your computer. You need to start joining groups. If not Jersey Coast, pick some other club to belong to. But get involved if you want to protect this fishery for your kids and the next generation.
That's it. It's a perverse pleasure, a macabre pleasure that these groups event, and you got some recreational, for lack of a better term, recreational fishing groups again, divide and conquer, that are all for Just stopping fish, subsistence fishing, keeping a fish to eat. My God, what a travesty it is! Oh, it's cutting into your $1,500 a day guide service.
Yeah.
Don't get me going, Fody. Okay, take care, man. We'll see you soon. Best to Linda. Yeah, I had to throw that in there. Just a little, maybe not 1,500, but just Anyway, up against a break. Be right back. Rag and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station.
Spoiled supermarket.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
And that'll do it for this week on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Deer season continues. Segment B, bear season continues. Waterfowl season, coastal zone, and all over the state continues. And that was Tom Foley talking about the cuts that are inevitable. Coming down the line, especially with striped bass. Let's get a quick fishery report with the main man, the one, the only, the famous and infamous Captain Dave the Rave Shoal. Mseican Bay Sports Center, 81 Natalie Terrace in Mseican, where sugar rules the lot. How you doing, Dave?
Doing great.
Let me tell you something, man. She didn't stop barking at me from the get-go. What's up with that? She's a good judge of character.
She's got those dog senses. You know, they go back to wolf senses, even though she's more the size of a can of beans. But
hey, what's happening on the bass? What are you seeing?
Well, like we just heard from Tom, unfortunately, you better catch them while you're allowed. But they're out here, and the weather's been okay. It is December, and I'll tell you what, the years catch up with you pretty quick. I did go out last Monday. We dropped some spot on the 3 mile line, and I got a nice 37 incher that I kissed goodbye to, and then I had my help in here, Billy, had a couple more hookups that, I don't know, they just pulled the hook. Those circle hooks are supposed to stay stuck when they're stuck, but they didn't. But in any case, yeah, it beats me up a little much. I don't know. I may have seen my last day unless something's really good and really close. But
yeah, Dave, I'm hearing more fish moving down. I had a big slug of fish move into Raritan Bay, coming down Long Branch, Monmouth Beach. They should be here pretty soon. But that may be it for the rest. Listen, don't forget the Back Bay area. They close, what, December 31st at midnight, correct, Dave?
Anything is closed. Anything inside of the co-regs line. Yeah. Yeah, right at the all the inlets, that's all closed. Yep. January 1st, we got. Yeah, they do. They have been catching them outside the last couple of years. The temperature's not bad. My problem is you can't fish. Yeah, you can't fish a 20-foot boat out in the ocean comfortable this time of year.
Exactly
but
right.
But you can't fish a 30-footer inside the bay, and I get more days fishing in the bay, and we catch a lot of fish overall. And I will definitely be back in March going after them.
Yeah, well, Dave, now I know you have a good tog business there. What's happening with the blackfish?
Well, believe it or not, they're still picking on the jetties.
Yeah.
It's definitely starting to slow down. But the boaters are, they're having a field
day.
They're
slamming them, man.
the weather's tough this time of year. But, you're going to get, I don't know, every year, well, I got the tanks here and I got the crabs, so I see a lot of tog fishermen in here. So
That's it.
And it's
you got it.
It's going to be good outside as long as you can stand it. But it's been a fantastic fall for tog and the amount of small ones that they're throwing back. And I hope most of them are getting thrown back. I know there's, well, we won't mention any way, shape, or form, but there are people that don't put them all back that are supposed to. And I hope,
the nature of the beast, Charles.
I know our conservation officers do their best to keep them honest, but I know what happens.
Okay, Cap, listen, we'll see you guys pretty soon, man. You take care.
Okay, I'll be around. All looks like I'll be here most of the winter. I might try to get warm for a couple days, but I'll be keeping things going around here. We'll be when these perch really turn on. We'll be here, and hopefully the bloodworm guy, I'll be bringing them out too, because it'll been hard to find the last couple of years.
It'll be here before you know it, man. Take care, brother.
Okay, we'll be talking to you,
Captain Dave. Man, he is great. Okay, see you next week, Rakuten Radio. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. Get out and enjoy, man. Some funky weather, but the stripes are still here. Fresh water is still strong. Hey, man, those trout that they put in some of the waters of the ponds for the winter trout cycle back Thanksgiving week, man, they are banging away. See you next week, Rack and Fin Radio.